The Titans of Trial podcast is sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.
From the Florida Justice Association, these are the Titans of Trial.
The opinion came out with the adoption of comparative negligence, which I think is the fair way. Let the jury decide who was at fault and to what extent.
Sammy Cacciatore, the trial lawyer who changed Florida's liability standard from contributory negligence to comparative negligence.
I have a pretty strong streak of Don Quixote. I don't ride around on my donkeys. I do like my cars.
Sammy's successful pleading changed the course of the law, not only in Florida, but across the United States. His Quixote-like quest for justice is based, surprisingly, on ego.
It's not to be narcissistic, but it's to have pride in what you're doing and accomplishing something that you can be proud of and you're helping.
Welcome to Titans of Trial, featuring the personal stories of the men and women who've made a difference to the practice of trial law in Florida. I'm Paul Jess, Executive Director of the Florida Justice Association. Every trial lawyer in Florida and their clients owe a debt of gratitude to Sammy Cacciatore of Melbourne, Florida. It was back in the early 70s, fresh out of law school, that he made his most successful argument before the Florida Supreme Court, that damage awards should not be disallowed simply because the victim bore some fault, but rather they should be awarded based on each party's percentage of fault for the act in question. This standard of comparative negligence has been the law of the land ever since, not only here in Florida, but afterward in a majority of other states. Sammy's early success resulted in multi-million dollar verdicts for his clients and a distinguished career that includes many awards and titles. He's a past president of the Florida Justice Association, has served on the Florida Bar's Board of Governors. He's also the current chairman of the Fellows of the Academy of Florida Trial Lawyers. Sammy Cacciatore sat down with Florida Justice Association radio host Harvey Bennett in February of 2018 to talk about that most famous case of his career to date, the importance he places on reading, and his advice for lawyers who not only want to get ahead, but be successful.
Sammy, in 1973, you did something that changed the course of trial law in Florida. You managed to change the standard from contributory negligence to comparative negligence in awards of damages. How did you come to that?
It's a case that just happened to fall into my lap. I moved over here and became part of Jim Nance's practice. Then, you know, I'm still here. It was a few years after coming here, I became his partner and we've been there. He assigned me a case, and it was a gentleman that was working at the Cape, and he worked all night, and he was driving home down here to the Melbourne area from the Cape. He was on US 1. He was coming south, and it was early in the morning, sometime like about 7:30, as I remember. It's been a long time because that accident occurred in the late 60s. As he was coming down the road, a big dump truck, and I don't mean just a small single axle dump truck pulling out from one of the side roads, but one of the large ones. And actually, I drove dump trucks when I was, after I turned 18, working my way through school in the summertime. And so I knew a little bit about that, but that driver pulled out and blocked both lanes. And Mr. Jones had nowhere to go. That was the big thing in the situation. I tried that case. And the judge directed a verdict saying that there was contributory negligence and therefore there was no recovery.
On the part of your client?
Yes, contributory negligence on the part of my client. He said, directed a verdict, and that was it. I just remembered back to the concept of comparative versus contributory negligence. I had had a professor in law school. His name was Frank T. Booker. He had been a plaintiff's trial lawyer, and he just went off on for a whole lecture about that doctrine. And I decided I was going to see if we could change it in Florida.
Wow. And you hadn't been out of law school all that long, had you?
No, I graduated in 66, and I think this was about, I came here in 67. I tried that case probably in 68 or early 69.
Wow, what a heady thing for a Stetson University law school graduate to take on.
Yes.
He must have been proud of you.
I have a pretty strong streak of Don Quixote. I don't ride around on my donkeys. I do like my cars.
Right.
But
and the pen is mightier than the sword, right?
That's right. But at that time, we were part of the 4th District Court of Appeals, and the court reversed it and sent it back and said that the issue of contributory negligence should have gone to the jury. It should have been the jury to make that decision and not the court. So we tried it again. And this time, we went to the jury, and the jury still found contributory negligence. But this time, it was a jury finding. So then I went back down to the 4th and challenged the contributory negligence. I researched it back to, if I remember correctly now, and I should have looked at the brief that I wrote, it all came out of a case in England, and I think it was in 1807, sometime around that period of time, and it had to do with a man and woman walking past and someone throwing some garbage out of one of the windows up above and a horse and carriage, and that's where contributory negligence came from. Sometime after that, England changed, and in fact, there was an attempt to do away with that in Florida in the late 1800s. Didn't go anywhere. I researched it back, showed that, in fact, that law applied in Florida because our Constitution here adopted the law of England. Put it all together in the fairness of the doctrine, and was able to, in the 4th District Court of Appeals, prevail. They then took an appeal, and it went from Jones versus Hoffman to Hoffman versus Jones at the Supreme Court. And it was the full bench. I made my argument. Lo and behold, the opinion came out with the adoption of comparative negligence, which I think is the fair way. Let the jury decide who was at fault and to what extent.
And then the damages accordingly.
And the damages apportioned according to the amount of fault.
Boy, you had a lot of opposition from big business, though, didn't you?
Well, I can best describe that by telling you a story. Justice James Atkins was the chief judge at the time. He asked a question, and he said, well, Mr. Cacciatore, this has been the law forever and ever. Why should we change it? I said, well, Your Honors, Justice, I don't mean to be presumptuous with what I'm about to say, but if you'll look to the right in this courtroom, there's no one in those benches. At that table is my partner, and I'm here. Over here to the left, look at the rolls. And I don't remember if it was 5, 6, or 7 rolls full of lawyers representing railroads, not only railroads, but the insurance industry, the medical profession. It was, you could go down there and it was all of the big law firms, a lot of them from out of state, having Florida counsel. I said, I don't mean to be, unprofessional, but I think that's the biggest reason why we haven't been able to get it changed. And he says, no, that's a fine point you made. Then we had the opinion.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that had changed the course of law in Florida ever since?
And all over the United States. I don't remember. I don't know if it's every state already has adopted it. If not, there's only 2 or 3 that do not follow it.
Now, your firm had a hand and was one of the big nine firms in the so-called big tobacco case in the mid-1990s in Florida that settled for more than $13 billion at the time. And you personally played a role in that along with your founding
Yes. The founding partner, Jim Nance, was primarily involved with that, but I was involved in it, and it was something we wanted to do. It's something that I've never smoked a cigarette. I've never puffed on a cigarette. It was something we wanted to do to help make things better for people. I really think we've had a pretty much an overall model in this law firm is to do right, to help people.
That was a big, very heady case.
Yes, it was.
You were born and raised in Central Florida. You went to Stetson University undergrad and for law school. What made you want to be a lawyer?
I don't know for sure. All I remember is that's the only thing I ever thought about being. It could be Perry Mason. I think my mom had something to do with it. I was kind of shy about speaking. So when I started it, I forced myself to become something as far as being able to speak. I remember the first time I got up to a podium, my knees were shaking, and I was, and everything else that can go with it. But I forced myself to do it. And I think I've done pretty good in voicing my opinions.
Absolutely. As testimony, numerous multi-million dollar verdicts and settlements. You describe yourself as a generalist. You've done a lot of medical malpractice cases. But going back to your school days, did you have a mentor?
Academically, not really. As far as the practice, I was in Orlando as a public defender for the first year of my practice. Bill Frederick was the public defender who was a part-time person at that time.
Who would later become Orlando mayor.
Orlando mayor, but he also had a personal injury firm, and he asked me to work with his personal injury firm after about 4 or 5 months. And I was there and doing the stuff, and I was being sent to Brevard County just about regularly. Got to know Booty or Mr. Nance needed someone, and I had just finished trying a slip and fall case here in this county, and he had been out looking around and talked to a judge that I'd tried that case before, and he recommended me, and I was here within 3 or 4 weeks of that conversation.
How did you go about honing your trial skills?
By trying a hell of a lot of cases. Getting the books, going to the seminars, and Nance was very good, giving me ideas and stuff, and as things go along, it went well.
What's the most rewarding part of being a plaintiff's attorney to you?
I just can just say best, it's helping people.
What would you say is your key to success? Is there any one particular skill that has served you well, that's been that constant?
From the beginning of coming out of law school, at that time, West Publishing used to give the graduates of the law schools a year subscription to the Pink Sheets. That was the paperback decisions that came out for this area of the country. And I got into the habit of reading them. I can't remember if they came out every 2 weeks or 3 weeks or once a month. I don't remember that. But I would go through that and read every opinion that related to our area of law, and still do. There's a Florida Law Weekly sitting on my desk behind me right now. And while I was waiting for you, I was highlighting those cases, and they will then go to the rest of the partners. I think it's knowing the law. I think that's the thing that helped me the most. And by being prepared, I got over my hesitance to speak.
A lot of lawyers keep stressing that word preparation.
Yeah.
Prepare. And it's hard work.
It is.
It's time on task.
Yeah. And you have to continue to read the law because it's changing every day.
Was there ever a point that you didn't think you were going to make it?
No, but there was a time when I had tried a bunch of cases and thought I was a big hot shot. And then I started losing some cases. And I'm not going to tell you how many. it was a... It, and yes, it was kind of... And And then I got it back under control and we went forward.
Isn't ego, though, play a role in being a good lawyer?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is. It's really important. It's not to be narcissistic, but it's to have pride in what you're doing and accomplishing something that you can be proud of and you're helping.
How helpful or hurtful can self-reflection be?
It can be both. If you get buried down into it and get disappointed and depressed, it's going to hurt you. If you just reflect and get over it, go forward.
How do you handle disappointment?
I put it out of my mind.
This is a very tough profession, lots of demands. What are the secrets to your day-to-day success?
I don't think there's any secrets. It's just hard work. I mean, people don't understand the work that goes in to being a lawyer. You got to dig out the facts. You got to dig out the law. You got to put it together in a way that can be presented and convince people.
You have been a lawyer since 1966. Obviously, many successes along the way. What keeps you going?
I like it.
And as long as you do, you'll keep on doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
When my wife and I got married, we were in school together. I was going to be a criminal defense lawyer, so I went to the public defenders. That's what I thought. But that didn't last. But her wedding present to me was Edward Bennett Williams' book, The Man to See. Oh. That was my wedding present. It's what I wanted.
Sammy, is there one particular case that you'll never forget or that has been most significant in your mind?
Well, of course, Jones versus Hoffman. But I remember one that I could cry about, and that was a young girl who had gone off to University of Florida. She was home for Thanksgiving, her first year there. She was jogging on a jogging path off the roadway, and a dump truck lost control, went over and killed her. And it was, I remember that mother and that father, and that one sticks in my mind a lot. The loss there. And again, I go back to some of my experiences, having driven those dump trucks for 3 summers at least, and know what to do with a dump truck and what you're not supposed to do. And he ran that thing off and just...
Mm-mm-mm. You have had many professional achievements throughout your career. You are a past president of the Florida Justice Association. You were on the board of directors for more than 2 decades, the winner of the BJ Masterson Award for highest standards of integrity for lawyers. You've served on the Florida Bar Board of Governors, Best Lawyers. The list goes on and on. How has your involvement with the Florida Justice Association impacted your career?
Just tremendously. I mean, as soon as I came here with Mr. Nance, I came in August. I went down, and I think it was October, was the first time I went to one of the conventions, became a member, been ever since. And in fact, Nance was a member of the Academy of Florida Trial Lawyers at the time on the board. He resigned that year, and he asked me to run the next time out. And I got involved, and it was there. But I just enjoy the law. I enjoy the profession. I enjoy most lawyers.
Now, you dealt with some tough issues when you were president with the Florida Justice Association. Yep. Any particular ones stand out?
Oh, we had a lot of problems during that period of time. That was in the 80s, and that was the first time they went after medical malpractice. There were a lot of things going on at that time that were negative. They were fighting us or cutting off the benefits for workman's comp injuries. It was very, very heavy as far as the situation. I do think there's a lot of difference between the people in the legislature now than that used to be. I remember Hyatt Brown was the leader at that time. He would always send down to us on late Monday or Tuesday morning because people were coming in for the session and let us know what their plan was going to happen and tell us, this is what's going to happen, this is where we're going to push, get your ducks in a row. The thing was, they weren't going to back off for us, but at least they gave us warning, and mm-hmm. That doesn't happen anymore. there's just so much stuff going on that where they come around from the backside and stab you.
You really do need a Florida Justice Association, don't you?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And everyone that's in this field should be a part of the Justice Association. Even if they're not doing this, it's a good place to learn your skills and learn how to best help your clients.
Sammy, how do you balance your professional life with your family life?
Truthfully, I don't think it was balanced initially. But about the time we got in the early 40s, and which would have been about the same time that I was president of the academy or in the chairs, that I got it together and started balancing it. Do what I'm supposed to do for here and for my profession, but I also started taking a good amount of time off, usually in the summer. We got into boating. We went from a 20-foot sailboat to that thing.
Wow. What type of boat is that?
That's a Nordhavn trawler, had built for us. It's by the Nordhavns.
It almost looks like a commercial trawler.
It does.
Very sturdy.
Oh, it is. It is. We've owned it for 19 years. Carolyn and I have traveled on it with ourselves or a lot of times our grandchildren. That boat alone has had over 38,000 nautical miles under keel with us aboard. It's been to Alaska, been through the Caribbean three times, the Bahamas every year. I learned about that sometime about the time when I was president-elect, that I knew that I needed to do something because that's when my kids were getting, they were in high school. You know, we just kept it going so we could do our things together.
Sure. You need to play an active role in your kids' lives. Yeah. And then this is the type of business that will suck every minute, every second, especially with the electronic devices these days. You're never really off.
Yeah. I wish we could turn them off or not be tempted to turn them on sometimes.
What about regrets?
I have no regrets about practicing law or being here. I'm glad I came to Brevard County when I did. We could just see the Falcon rocket take off. Elon Musk's big tank candlestick going off in the sky.
Yeah, that's spectacular.
Yeah.
What's your view on the future of the legal profession? Do you have concerns?
Yes. It's being turned into a business as opposed to a profession. And I think it's happening to all professions. I have a lot of doctor friends. They're being put in these groups and they're being told what to do. As far as the law, the big law firms, also the advertising, I'd like to see it kind of calm down a little bit.
What's the risk?
You're not going to care as much for your clients. If you're involved with your clients in your case, you're going to be a lot much better than if you're just about getting them in and work.
Yeah, some others have pointed out that it can lead to a trend of just settling everything. And if there's some cases, if you never take them to trial, you'll never see the societal change that's required or potential.
Yeah, I use the Jones versus Hoffman story a lot of times when I'm speaking to lawyers because we all need to get the law right. Our Constitution is a living document. We need to continue to have it fit in with our current society in the right way.
We've talked about the law. Let's talk ethics. Do the ends sometimes justify the means?
No. I just think that we owe it to our profession to do what is right.
And sometimes that involves losing.
That does involve losing. That's right. You do your best, but you don't cheat to win.
What one piece of advice do you have for incoming lawyers?
Keep your nose to the grindstone.
Sammy, how would you like to be remembered?
As a nice person, a good lawyer, somewhat of a trailblazer, and someone who your family cares about.
Sammy Cacciatore, you are a titan of trial. Thank you.
Thank you.
This This is Paul Jess. We hope you enjoyed listening to this Titans of Trial episode. If you're not already a member, we'd like to invite you to join the Florida Justice Association. Please visit us on the web at floridajusticeassociation.org or drop us a line at radio@floridajusticeassociation.org.
Thank you for listening to this Titans of Trial podcast, sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.